Hello.
Hello, Deanne.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
How are
Yeah,
you?
not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Welcome to Stir the Pots.
Thank you for having me.
You're actually my first beverage industry person, so
Oh, that's exciting.
it's a lucky first for me.
Cool. Well, I'm stoked. Thank you.
Okay. Well, what do I call you? A mixologist, a bartender, a sommelier? Or what are the differences?
Oh, geez. I mean, I'm kind of all of the above. I mean, I do the wine, I do the spirits, and I do the bartending. So I just call myself like a beverage specialist, and I haven't really figured out what to go by yet. But in my business card says beverage specialist, so I guess that'll work.
And how did you get into the beverage industry?
Well, I started just as a bartender, and that was like my first job. And then I moved, and I started working in lots of different restaurants. And I eventually started managing, and then I was the beverage director for a restaurant for a while. And then when I was doing that job, I sort of really got into it, thinking, I can't wait till I do this on my own. And I thought, like, how could I get more into it? And I started, reading my magazines and just being like, wow, this really seems like it can go beyond bartending, and I can actually make a career out of this. And it's something that I was very passionate about. So I started studying, and then that's when I began my sommelier courses, and I just decided just to go for it and pursue it. So now I've done studying the mixology and studying this sommelier, and I think that at this point I may still continue to study it more. So I haven't really stopped, but there is no ceiling for me at this point, so I just want to keep going with that.
And you're a certified sommelier, or?
There's four levels till master, and so I'm a second level certified. I'm contemplating going all the way. I mean, I feel like now I've just come halfway, and I might as well just continue going,
Right.
It's very difficult, so we'll see.
What is the role for a sommelier now? I mean, people are kind of trending down, going more casual. Do you think that is going to be kind of like a dying art or a species?
You know what? I think about it, but at the same time, there obviously are positions out there for it. People are the trend now, or what it seems to be, is that people are sort of going more by the glass these days and trying to scale down. They're buying cheaper bottles of wine when they're dining out and that sort of thing. But the need for, the fine dining restaurants are really exploding right now. And with that are the need for sommeliers to be able to put together beverage programs. Now, they do just more than hang out at your table and tell you what wine to pick. I mean, they do train the staff. They do create the list themselves. They do offer, specialized bottles and things like that. And it goes beyond that too. They start pairing food and wines and doing even the cocktail programs as well. But I don't know. At this point, I haven't put my sommelier to work just yet. I write my own blog. I think you're familiar with. I write my own blog. I profile wines. I do that for myself and for my company. So I just want to continue doing that because I don't have anybody telling me what and how to do it. I can do it just for my own fun and for my own passion and for my own, like, knowledge. But I could definitely work in a restaurant and put the long hours in and be there all the time and do that. But at this point, it's not something that I'm really interested in. So I'm
Right.
kind of waiting it out. So.
What do you find is like the most popular sort of drink these days? Is it wine? Is it cocktails? Or is beer on the what are you finding people are most drinking these days?
Gosh, I guess I don't know. The cocktail craze is it's really getting like quite a boost. And I think people are really interested in, like, now they're sort of interested in what they're drinking. And I think that's where the mixology stuff comes in, because we're sort of educating people now that, you just don't throw a bunch of sweet stuff in a cocktail and, drink it and have all these sugar additives and things like that. I think, like, I don't know what the most popular drink is now, but I think that people are starting to care more about what they drink. So whether it is beer, like the craft beer is really, going off right now, and the wine thing, people are just sort of like getting into the hang of it. So I think, like, I don't know, I don't think there's any one beverage specifically.
Right.
But I do think there's a little more attention to detail there. So that's great. I mean, for the industry itself and for me.
Do you think cocktails are appropriate for eating or before you eat? I mean, does it kind of kill the whole idea of having a great meal? You have to build a kind of cocktail that doesn't destroy the meal.
Yeah, actually, I think right, at least in LA, and hopefully like in New York, it's happening quite often where now we're getting away from the wine pairing. And people are seeing like, oh, we need to offer something that's more, you know, exciting. And people are starting to do cocktail pairings for menus now, which is, I think it's a lot of fun because it's almost more difficult to pair cocktails for a specific menu than it is to do wine because, you know, you can use all these crazy different numbers of wines, but you can't, you know, they never change. There's always your Cabernet, your Merlot, your Syrah, your varietals. But it's easier to pair those with certain dishes. Whereas when with cocktails and food, you really have to be specific about, like, what kind of spirit you're using and what kind of flavors you're using. And, you know, and to match those flavors and to kind of, like, enhance that experience. It's starting to happen a lot more frequently here, and I think it's really exciting. So hopefully people will get into it.
And so maybe they're a healthier or different than your usual fruity cocktail. They could even go to savory then, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Uh-huh. There's, like, there's no limit. It's almost crazy how this cocktail culture is changing the way that we, like, add ingredients. It's in a way, a form of cooking in itself. You know, you really have to, like, be able to match sweet and savory and balance the sugar and the sugars and, you know, the spirits themselves, they have to shine too. So it's really unique and interesting. I'm really enjoying it right now.
Hence the name mixologist.
That's right.
Well, you know, I was at a restaurant last night, just a local place, and I always look at the cocktails, and I'm not a real big cocktail drinker because I think a lot of the stuff that people make are just the old retro standards and
old school.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, I don't think I want to drink that before I have dinner because I'm going to get plastered, you know? So is there a way to make a cocktail that's not, like, going to knock you over? And
actually, in my opinion, it's really, I like the old school, but again, too, I see it far too often, and there are some trends that are kind of, like, leading towards that. And those cocktails are particularly strong. So I think that, like, they're not always that way, and you can always ask your mixologist or your bartender to, you know, kind of, like, lay off or ease it up. But the thing with the cocktails that are crafted is that they tend to be so good that you don't notice how much alcohol is in them. And it's not because they're hiding it. It's just that they're really, you know, highlighting that spirit itself. And the flavors in them are so good that you actually drink more of them. And then they end up hitting you later and you didn't realize, like, wow, you know, you only wanted to have two and you end up having, like, four. And, you know, so maybe that's dangerous. I don't know. But in a way, it's like, there are ways to, you know, have less alcohol, or you could ask your bartender or your mixologist for a spirit that maybe isn't as high in alcohol, or just to tell them to kind of, you know, make it less. I don't know. There's no way around that, really.
Well, I actually noticed there are places that do have, like, non-alcoholic beverages that are really nice mixes of, like, different things that, you know, for people who can't have alcohol or...
You can always get a virgin anything, and they can equally make those cocktails that are specialty items, you know, whether it be a certain kind of juice or, you know, whatever ingredients they're using, they can always make those virgin as well, so.
often find that, like, my wife especially, she'll go to a restaurant and she'll go, oh, I'll have a Chardonnay, and just, like, pick whatever. Is there something to be said about just having that standard, like, a varietal, rather than this is, wine is made by so-and-so? And I just seen something about labels and how wines, you know, aren't really defined that well, that, you know, they're just pretty looking, and there's some places that are actually putting a lot more information on labels for people to get a little more educated. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's definitely that. I mean, you kind of have to, for your guests, just like, you know, even for food, you have to offer something that a little something for everyone. So you have to offer your standard varietals. But what you can do with that, as a sommelier or a beverage director or manager, you can definitely try to offer multiple varietals that are different in style, so that you can sort of educate someone, saying like, oh, I come in and I know that I love my Chardonnay and I know that that's what I want. But if you have two additions, or, you know, four or three, you can say, you know, please be my guest and try this, this style and this style. And it helps them to also kind of learn about that wine. And, you know, some people just think that those Chardonnays are just buttery, you know, styles, and that's not always the case. So if they learn something, then you've done your job, you know. Mm-hmm. I think, like, of course, it's that's also comes hand in hand with training the staff as well, or to offer another varietal that's maybe very similar to Chardonnay, so that way you can say, oh, well, you know, this is something that I have, like, on special or whatever, and that it's similar, and I think that you might be interested in it. But you kind of have to, you know, with wine, you kind of have to offer, you know, your mainstays. But the fun in that really is to be able to get multiple kinds of styles and vendors and, you know, labels that are different. So,
right. And how do you go about creating how do you pair wines for somebody who wouldn't know? I mean, what are you looking for?
Well, I guess it, for me, it's each guest is different. So there are your guests that know exactly what they want, and then there's the guest that's open to trying something new, and then there's the guest that maybe just wants, like, you to tell them what to have. So you kind of have to feel your guest out and talk to them, and, you know, ask them about what their palate is like, what do you often drink, what kind of styles do you like? Do you like dry? Do you like off dry? Do you like, you know, those kinds of things, where they can figure out. And it can sort of, like, lead you to go from there, you know? So I think, like, even if they don't like it, there's no harm in that, you know? So that's ultimately what the wine tasting is for, is just to see what you do like and what you don't like. So I think that's the easiest way to go through it. And they'll usually tell you right away, like, I want to try something I've never tried before. I mean, it's just very... It's usually pretty casual, you know?
Right. What do you think about twist-off wines rather than the cork?
I don't have a problem with twist-off wines. I mean, if the quality is there and ultimately, you know, the wine is decent, or even, I don't mind. I mean, I often profile low-budget wines, so I guess in some ways it's kind of like, fine. But once you get into, you know, your higher end, I think people really, I think they just want that cork. I'm really not sure why they shy away from it. But ultimately, it's what's in the bottle. So I think I'm totally fine with screw-offs. I think it works. But I've read some reports that in France and in these big regions where they're known for, you know, their extensive wines, I think that they're starting to move to twist-offs as well. And it's just, it's trends, you know. When somebody else starts doing it, it seems, okay, they've done it, you know. They've gone to twist-offs, and I think it becomes more acceptable as we go.
What makes for a good beverage?
You know, I think, like, something that just is comforting and hits the spot, and it's something that, you know, sometimes when you go to anywhere, you know what you want. You want some milk. You want some juice. You want some soda that has bubbles. You already know what the taste is that you want. So I think a good beverage is something that makes you like happy. You know, when you go to a restaurant, I want a Diet Coke. I mean, if that makes you feel like you're going to have your meal and it's going to be there for you and it's comforting, it's just like food. I think that's what makes a good beverage. So if it's there and you can, and you're happy with that and you know what you want, it's the same thing with cocktails too. Then all of a sudden, you know, oh, I have a taste for bourbon tonight. Well, that's a good beverage then, because then your bartender or your mixologist is going to make you a cocktail with bourbon and it's going to hit the spot. You know, so I think that's a good beverage.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that there are more people drinking during hard economic times like today? Or is that just an old fallacy or myth?
Good saying that, you know, people drink in the good times and in the bad, and that's totally true. Uh-huh. I think that, yeah, people are starting to care about what they drink now. And the luxury brands are still going, you know, full on. So I don't see that. I actually think that it's a good time to be in this industry when, you know, times are tough and people are you know, pinching their pennies.
Well, you're behind the bar quite often. So what is it that you like to drink when you're not serving other people?
I don't know. I think, like, I'm a pretty simple person. If there's something, like, I go somewhere and there's a new cocktail list, I always, obviously, it's the first thing I look at. If it's something that seems like I've never had before or something that's unique, I'll definitely try it. I'm definitely open to trying new stuff. But I'm really simple. I mean, I'll just go in, I'll have a glass of wine, or when I'm out with my friends, I just drink vodka soda. I mean, I just have a very simplistic, like, you know, I don't need anything fancy. But I don't know. I really enjoy cocktail bars a lot, so I don't have a go-to, I guess. Just maybe vodka soda.
Okay. And what's the steps you would take to go into your profession? What would you give advice to people to do?
Well, I definitely would say start working in restaurants. I mean, they go hand in hand if you can get in with someone. I mean, I really, like, am inspired by the people I work with, like chefs, and they, you know, help me, like, craft my cocktails because they're always introducing me to stuff. You know, I don't come from a chef background, but I'm always learning from them. So I would definitely say, like, if you can get into a culinary school or something like that, that's like a really good start, or even starting with the Master Sommelier program. I mean, it just, most of my knowledge is self-taught. I mean, I read a lot, I still read a lot, and it's just experience. So get in those restaurants, get in those bars, and, you know, go from there.
Try everything. And you're going to be traveling soon to Asia. What are you going to be looking for there for new ideas?
Be looking, because I'm kind of under the impression right now that there's not a whole lot of, like, cocktail stuff going on there, and I could be totally wrong. So I'm really looking forward to going there and just seeing, like, what the restaurants are like, what their cocktails, if any, are like. I heard there's, you know, mostly beer happening over there, so I'm interested in finding out about that, and definitely, you know, getting over there and seeing what they have to offer as far as spirits go. Wines, if any. So I'm just extra excited to just uncover it. So we'll see.
I just got back from Ecuador, and actually we found Ecuadorian wine actually being made, the first like vineyard. It was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that's exciting. I think it's really exciting too that the wine industry is, like, still going, which is great, because I used to live in Venezuela for a while, and there were very small lots of wine growing there, but it wasn't like a place that was known for making wine. So I think that now they're starting to get into it as well. And of course, we know the regions like Chile and stuff are really just super hot. So I think it's exciting that, you know, more regions will be able to lend themselves to wine making here pretty soon. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. South African varietals, I think that they taste very unique to me, at least. So I'm very like looking forward to stuff that I haven't tried yet.
Yeah.
And definitely when I go to Asia, I mean, I'll be looking for just about anything I can get my hands on. So we'll see.
And what's your latest cocktail you're fixing up? What's the new drink that you've created?
The newest one I've done is it's called the Wild Orchid. It's made with gin and fresh lavender, blueberries, lemon, and coconut water. So it's quite refreshing, and I'm getting pretty good response from it. But that's probably the latest thing I've done. But yeah, I just have I keep competing, and I have some other bartenders here that in LA, they're just really raising the bar. So it's kind of exciting. I have a rum punch also that I'm working on that I have to do for a presentation at the end of the month in October. So kind of like trying to find some ingredients that, you know, you wouldn't find typical of a rum punch.
Right.
And it's exciting. It's fun. It's super fun.
Hope you win that big competition that you're in. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a competition for LA's best quote-unquote bartender. I'm up against some really heavy hitters. And I'm just excited to even be picked. They picked six out of probably, I don't even know how many finalists. There was a ton of entries. They picked six finalists. I'm the only female. And so I hope that that's good in my corner to represent. We just have to, actually I had my first meeting with the judges last night, and I'll have a second meeting tonight, and they will probably be deciding in October who comes out on top, so we'll see.
Yeah, because I've seen you've been in some interesting places to go shop for stuff, so I was really scratching my head going, why'd she go to that place?
Yeah, I did. Well, because the rum punch is in presentation with this competition. So at the end of the month, all of the finalists, we're going to have a cocktail party, and we'll all be preparing our own rum punch. So I'm Mexican, and so I kind of want to stay what's unique to me. And so I went shopping at a supermercado, and I'm trying to find some, you know, unique ingredients there that, like, you know, are unique to Southern California, is unique to, you know, Mexican culture.
Sure.
And I don't think that anyone else will be going there. So, we'll see.
Should be good.
I'm really excited for the cocktail. I think I have the right idea. So I just can't put out my secrets just yet. So.
No. We'll be watching. We'll be listening.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you, Dan.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.